Hello everyone, this is Sharon. I'm bringing you the pantograph for today, which is Wednesday, December 5th, 2018. And we will begin today's reading on the front page of the paper with an article entitled Berrickman, Legalizing Marijuana Inevitable. Questions remain on revenue, employer policies, and local opt-out. Jason Berrickman is confident recreational marijuana will be legal in Illinois in 2 years, but a lot of details remain undecided. It's rather inevitable that Illinois will act to legalize cannabis next year, said Berrickman, a Republican state senator from Bloomington. And I think it's incredibly important that if that be the case, we sit at the table and make sure it's done in an appropriate way. Berrickman hopes to let local areas opt out of legalizing marijuana, allow employers to impose zero tolerance policies for use, direct some sales proceeds to law enforcement, and use revoking driver's licenses as a deterrent for underage violators under a recreational marijuana law if passed. Those areas and the amount of new money the state will bring in from sales remain in question as recreational marijuana supporters prepare a push for new legislation under Democratic Governor-elect J.B. Pritzker, who made legalization a centerpiece of his campaign. I don't know what the number is, and I'll tell you, anyone who says they do is fooling you, said Berrickman. The market is undefined, and one of the moving parts is where we set tax rates. If you tax too much, you're not going to dry up the black market. The Illinois Economic Policy Institute and the University of Illinois' Project for Middle Class Renewal estimated $525 million would be generated annually, according to a November report. Berrickman said that though he expects proceeds to be used for new programs, I think the majority view is going to be this is a new pot of money, let's go spend it on something else, he said. He'd rather they be directed to state debt and resources for law enforcement to deal with legalization, like training and equipment to test impairment from marijuana. Communities who opt out of legalization could lose out on the new revenue, however. Another potential sticking point that Berrickman said is likely to be worked out in the legislative process. My opinion was, look, let's say that Bloomington opted out. The reality is people will still use marijuana in Bloomington, said Berrickman. Law enforcement will still be taxed with policing the streets, and I think they still deserve some of the money generated by sales. Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner said the city is unlikely to opt out of legalization. Normal Mayor Chris Coos said it's too soon to tell if or how the town would address opting out. Berrickman said he won't vote for any proposal that doesn't allow employers to choose whether or not they can hire or continue to employ people who test positive for marijuana use. He'd also like to include taking away driver's licenses from those who use marijuana before they're 21 years old. He noted, working people and youths are not the demographics that have changed behavior most in estates with legal recreational marijuana. It's those who are empty nesters, who may or may not have used cannabis when they were younger in college. They're rule followers. They don't use today because it's against the law, but they may change their habits. You don't have to raise your hand, said Berrickman with a laugh. Berrickman addressed the issue at a McLean County Chamber of Commerce luncheon before more than 100 in local business and government. He said legalization is not only potentially lucrative, but also would end an expensive and failing effort to prohibit marijuana use. It's those in law enforcement who are policing it, those in the prosecutor's office who are prosecuting it, those in the county jails and state prisons who incarcerate violators, and the black mark on those individuals when they're released, he said. Voters around the state are challenging us to look harder at how we're spending our money, and this deserves another look. Officials say the county was hit by four twisters. No estimate for Saturday's damage. The four tornadoes that swept through the Leroy, Ellsworth, and Colfax areas Saturday night were part of a cluster of 27 confirmed tornadoes that set a new record for the largest December tornado outbreak in Illinois history. The previous record was 21 twisters on December 18th and 19th, 1957, mostly in southern Illinois. 12 people were killed, including 9 in Murfreesboro. There were no reported injuries in Saturday's McLean County twisters, although several homes and other property and numerous trees were damaged. The National Weather Service had not yet released an official damage estimate as of Tuesday morning. All four tornadoes traveled northeast. McLean County Emergency Management Agency Director Bob Clark said the National Weather Service, like the National Weather Service, his office is still reviewing the damages. It's going to take some time to figure all of that out, he said. Tornadoes can happen any time, but the Emergency Management Association was ready for Saturday's event. The Weather Service put out the tornado watch early in the day, so we were prepared, said Clark. All of our spotters did a great job, and we were happy nobody was hurt, but it was a busy night. Saturday's outbreak will rank as the third largest tornado outbreak in Illinois history. The largest outbreak was on April 19, 1996, with 39 tornadoes, followed by April 2, 2006, with 36. The National Weather Service confirmed the four McLean County tornadoes were reported from 7:06 p.m. until 7:44 p.m. Tornadoes are ranked based on the Enhanced Fujita Scale, which rates the intensity based on the damage they cause. The scale ranks tornadoes from an EF0, which is wind speeds estimated at 65 to 85 miles per hour, to EF5, which is wind speeds estimated at over 200 miles per hour. The Illinois tornadoes started at 1:54 p.m. in Pleasant Hill, a small Pike County town in southwestern Illinois. The Taylorville tornado, the 17th of the day, was ranked as an EF3 and started at 5:01 p.m., ending at 5:25 p.m. It traveled 12.7 miles, was a half mile in diameter, and wind speed peaked at 155 miles per hour. The National Weather Service said 22 people were injured, 34 homes were severely damaged or destroyed, 66 homes had major damage, and 406 homes were damaged but inhabitable. The 24th tornado was an EF1 that started at 7:06 p.m. southwest of Leroy. It lasted only 2 minutes, was estimated at 50 yards wide, packed winds of 90 miles per hour, and traveled about 1 mile. The 25th tornado is the one that caused damage in the Dawson Lake area near Leroy, lasting 2 minutes, beginning at 7:18 p.m., The EF2 tornado had winds estimated at 114 miles per hour, was 100 yards wide, and traveled 0.7 of a mile. It damaged property owned by Tom and Pam Pluria, Brad Hubble, and at least one other homeowner. It doesn't have to travel a great distance to do a lot of damage, said Dan Smith, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service. If something is in its way, it is going to be damaged. The 26th twister was rated as an EF0 and the least intense, with wind speeds of 85 miles per hour. It traveled 0.1 mile and was 25 yards wide. Located southwest of Ellsworth, it lasted a minute, starting at 7:21 p.m. The final tornado in Illinois, an EF1, began at 7:42 p.m. near Colfax. It lasted 2 minutes with winds at 95 miles per hour. It was about 75 yards wide. It traveled 0.6 of a mile and destroyed at least one barn. Three cows died when a power pole fell. Today's Flick Flack. Flick Fact. Bloomington Normal continues to sprawl. As an example, its east side has reached all the way to Tawanda Barnes Road, once a country road several miles east of the cities that now even has Bloomington Normal subdivisions east of it. Do you know where the east side expansion will end? And the answer is, city planners say the wind turbines that are another mile or two east of Tawanda Barnes Road will probably be a natural border, and that it would be difficult to plant homes between them. Daily Digest, Master Gardener Training Available. University of Illinois Extension is now accepting applications for the online Master Gardener Training Program. An interest in gardening with time to volunteer and share knowledge with others is all that is required. The online self-guided course allows Illinois residents to complete the training according to their own schedule. It requires about 4 hours per week for 14 weeks and includes videos, reading the manual, and completing quizzes. Registration for the winter class is open through January 4th, and the class will begin on January 21st. For information or an application form, contact the University of Illinois Extension Livingston-McLean Woodford County Unit at 309-663-8306 or sgthomas@illinois.edu or visit master-gardener.extension.illinois.edu/mgot. Road closure, Clearwater Avenue, Bloomington. Clearwater Avenue between Nikki and Kenneth is closed until further notice for street repairs. Motorists should choose an alternate route. Today in history. Today is Wednesday, December 5th. It's the 339th day of 2018, and there are only 26 days left in this year. Today's highlights: on December 5, 1994, Republicans chose Newt Gingrich to be the first GOP Speaker of the House in four decades. And the thought for today from Mike Todd, American movie producer, who lived from 1907 to 1958. I've never been poor, only broke. Being poor is a frame of mind. Being broke is only a temporary situation. Continuing with more local news, hearing on ballot challenge delayed. Ward 4 candidates' petitions in question. An objection filed over Bloomington City Council candidate Julie Emig's nominating petitions will be heard next week, because she was unable to attend a Bloomington Board of Election Commissioners hearing on Tuesday. The three-member board agreed to reschedule the hearing on the objection filed November 27th by Bloomington resident Regina Noland, to noon on Monday. Chairman Denise Williams said Emig emailed that she had a work conflict. Rules adopted for this challenge allow for such rescheduling if someone shows good cause, and Julie does have a very good cause, said Williams. Emig, an instructional assistant professor for Illinois State University, could not attend because she was administering final presentations for the two classes she teaches, said Williams. Because it is a final assessment, she can't arrange for a substitute, added Williams. Noland stated in her challenge that petitions circulated for Emig by Michael Gorman and Justin Boyd should be disqualified because they left blank the spaces designating the state and county. If the challenge is successful, 45 signatures could be thrown out, leaving Emig with 77 signatures. BEC paperwork shows a minimum of 90 signatures needed to be submitted to run in Ward 4 in the April 2nd election. Emig and insurance broker Don Chip Frank were the only candidates to file for the seat, held by Alderman Amelia Burgess, who is not seeking a second term. In a written response to the objection, Jeff Brown, Emig's attorney, characterized the oversight as minor and merely technical in nature. The petitions were signed by a notary, and the spaces that were left blank identify where the notarization process took place, he added. In this matter, there is no allegation that there was any deficiency in the notary commission or in the notarization process, contended Brown. Indeed, the notary seal that is affixed to each page of the nominating papers establishes that the notaries in question are commissioned within the state of Illinois in compliance with the requirements of the election code. Brown further contended the objection should be denied because Noland has not established that the alleged errors is violation of election law. Even if the error is substantiated, it is merely technical in nature, and the nominating papers substantially comply with the legal requirement, Brown contended. Others circulating petitions for Emig were Jeff Krabel, a candidate for the Ward 8 council seat, Mayor Terry Renner, and Shana Wachinski, who recently was elected to the McLean County Board. Noland, a resident of Ward 4, said her objection was important because the paperwork needs to be filled out properly, and it was Julie's responsibility. If she can't oversee signatures to run for the ward, how can she effectively oversee the whole ward? Noland told reporters after Tuesday's meeting. Noland said she also checked Frank's petitions, and they appeared to be in order. Emig and Frank were among 8 city residents to file as candidates for the 4 seats open for election on the 9-member council. The others who filed by the November 26 deadline were, in alphabetical order, Donna Bolin, Jen Carrillo, Georgine Chisel, Craybill, incumbent Karen Schmidt, and Travis Wilson. Alderman David Sage of Ward 2 and Diana Howman of Ward 8 are not running again. OSF opening new type of urgent care in Normal. Ergo model to make visits easier and appeal to busy young adults. Don't let the coffee shop-like appearance fool you. The building at 211 Greenbrier Drive near Walmart, Michaels, Portillo's, and other busy retailers is for healthcare. And for coffee, water, and to charge your smartphone if you need that in addition to being treated for a minor illness or injury. OSF Ergo, Urgent Care for People on the Go, touted by OSF Healthcare as a new type of urgent care center, opens December 11th and will be open 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. 365 days a year. In addition, OSF has signed a lease for the former Schlotzky's location at 508 IAA Drive, Bloomington, for a medical office building, said Lynn Fulton, president of OSF Healthcare St. Joseph Medical Center and executive lead for OSF's Ergo project. Asked about plans for that property, Fulton said, "We're still in the design phase and evaluating our options." At Greenbrier, the exterior design looks like any other retailer. "This is designed to be reflective of a coffee shop," Fulton said. "We want patients to be comfortable. We're going to get them in and out quickly so they can get on with their day." Care guides, who are certified medical assistants or licensed practical nurses, will meet patients in the lounge that will include coffee, water, and charging stations, said Melinda Cooling, OSF Vice President of Advanced Practice and Operational Lead for OSF Ergo. Care guides will take patients to what are being called exam suites, because they are larger than typical exam rooms. "All of the care happens in here, from registration to discharge," Cooling said, in one of the exam suites. "That includes getting weight and vital signs and an exam by a nurse practitioner." Care guides will lead patients through the entire visit, which will make it easier on the patient, Fulton said. OSF Ergo is designed to appeal to busy younger adults, so generally are located in retail centers close to where people live, work, and play, Fulton said. "We hope this model will attract new patients," she said. While OSF has two Ergos in Champaign, two in the Peoria area, and one in Morris, the Greenbrier location is the first for Bloomington Normal. The 3,600-square-foot building was a MedExpress. OSF is leasing the building but spent about $800,000 to renovate and equip the building that includes four exam suites, a suite for minor procedures such as lacerations, and an X-ray room. In addition to treating colds, flu, infections, sprains, minor lacerations, and fractures, Ergo staff will perform sports physicals, X-rays, and provide occupational medicine such as drug testing, Fulton and Cooling said. The location will be staffed by three or four advanced practice nurses, eight care guides, a radiological technologist, and a manager. OSF's four traditional urgent care locations in Bloomington Normal, OSF Prompt Care, will remain open, Fulton said. Ergo is designed to be in addition to Prompt Care, not in place of it. "We designed it to continue to build new relationships for OSF." County eyes solutions to psychiatric cuts. Officials say CHS decision will impact court and jail programs. County officials were starting work Tuesday on a plan to fill a major gap in mental health services created by the McLean County Center for Human Services' decision to halt new referrals to its psychiatric program. "It's never a good thing when you lose options for service," said Sheriff John Sandage, adding he and his staff will work with county administrators to find options for inmates who need psychiatric care after their release from jail. CHS announced on Monday that it was suspending new admissions for people who need psychiatric care due to a lack of state and United Way funding. Data collected for the McLean County Criminal Justice Coordinating Council indicates about 30% of the jail's 225 inmate population needs mental health services. The ability of jail staff to set up appointments for inmates with CHS shortly after they're released is a critical part of the jail's mental health program. County Administrator Bill Wasson said the CHS decision can impact referrals for services for the program funded in part by the health department, and no new clients will be referred from the problem-solving courts or our detention and correctional facilities. The United Way, once a major source of financial support for social service agencies, has seen dramatic reductions in the income over the past 3 years. CHS Executive Director Tom Barr said CHS has used $1.4 million in reserves to support the psychiatric program, but that level of support cannot continue. The county will be looking at both interim and long-term solutions to the shortage of psychiatric care, said Wasson. It's not as simple as filling one hole because there's a larger need for services, he said. All options are on the table, said Wasson, and could include using some of the sales tax money collected from Bloomington Normal and earmarked for community mental health. We're going to look at all opportunities. We know CHS doesn't have the capacity to fill the need. This is a challenging area. We all know it's difficult to expand services, said Wasson. McLean County Board Chairman John McIntyre said the psychiatric cuts definitely impact our court programs, agreeing the county will consider multiple providers and funding sources, including grants, in the effort to maintain services. The county's mental health and drug courts rely on CHS to provide services for participation in the specialized probation programs. It's not uncommon for specialty court parsipitants to have co-occurring substance abuse and mental health issues. Chestnut Health Systems provides substance abuse services to the court programs. The psychiatric program provides services to people 12 and older with severe mental illness, including assistance with medication. The 752 current clients will continue to receive services, but that number will continue to decrease if new funding is not available, said Barr. How time flies. 100 years ago, on December 5, 1918, a 16-year-old Lota girl disappeared just as she was about to testify before a Ford County grand jury. Insiders said this looks like an elaborate plan with a lot of money behind it. 75 years ago, on December 5, 1943, Congressman Everett Dirksen of Pekin announced his candidacy for the Republican nomination for president. 50 years ago, in 1968, the Big Rig truck stop was annexed to Normal. And 25 years ago, on December 5, 1993, there was a growing trend in town where neighbors turn out to fight proposed developments in their backyards. One attorney cautioned, "If you don't own it, you don't control it." We'll now take a short break and then return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for today, which is Wednesday, December 5th, 2018. Please stay tuned.